And that's why, to me, the most important place to start is really identifying your own self. I think that it's important for you to know your why, not from a place of judgment or not from a place of trying to justify your actions, but from a place of why are you doing what you're doing so that you can be intentional about what you're doing. I think that that's really, really important. So my why in a public space, right? Like if I'm at a party and they happen to have like kinky activities, my why is because I like doing kinky activities and I want to experience something new, versus my why with a romantic partner is because I'm trying to build deeper connection with that person. Mm-hmm. So my negotiations are going to look very, very differently.
Welcome to Vaginas, Vulvas, and Vibrators with Jordan Donnell. This is a safe place to learn about women's health and sexual wellness. I'm your host, Jordan Donnell, physician assistant, women's sexual health educator, and intimacy coach. Welcome back to the Vaginas, Vulvas, and Vibrators podcast. Today I have Uni joining me. We are talking all about being a switch, and I'm so excited to have you here to have this conversation. So I'd love to let you just kind of introduce yourself, then we'll dive right in.
Yeah, my name is Uni. I go by she and they pronouns, and I'm an artist, a facilitator, and an educator of healing, intimacy, and kink.
Yes. So how did you learn that you were a switch?
I think I've always been a switch. I don't know if there was really a learning. I think like we identified earlier, like I'm a projector in Ayurveda, like I'm tridoshic in astrology, like I'm a water, earth, like fire sign. So I feel like all of my like makeup is very switchy. And I think that before I was like deep in kink community, I've always been kinky, but I've always had like a deep need to be very like versatile and fluid. And I've never been like satisfied just kind of having one role or doing one thing.
So for the listeners who are not familiar with a switch, I would love to kind of define like, what is a switch? How is that different from maybe a dom or a sub, and kind of go into details there?
Yeah. So typical, like, and I'll just do like super quick overview. Like a dominant personality is generally someone who likes to be in control, who likes to make the decisions. If you're in a scene, you may also identify as a top or the person kind of curating the experience, providing the experience. As a submissive or a sub, you might also identify as a bottom. You're going to be the person receiving the experience. You're going to be the person kind of surrendering your control, and you're going to be kind of following the dominant's lead. A switch is confusing because you like both spaces, right? So typically when someone identifies as a dominant or as a submissive, it's because a bigger part of them, if not all of them, wants to kind of own that identity. A switch feels good and comfortable or excited or like most themselves in this like fluidity role. And I think I say that it's confusing because it can be like in play, right? And so you have to be really clear with what role you're playing scene to scene or within relationship to relationship, which takes a lot of communication.
Yeah. I know for me on the BDSM quiz, have you taken that before?
Yeah.
So like I'm a switch as well. And it's very interesting how different it is with different people. Because if somebody can lead really well and they are in more dominant than me, I am fine being a submissive. But if that's not the case, then I generally lean towards being the dominant. Is that something that's pretty common for switches?
I think it's common for anyone that has a informed and healthy relationship with kink or BDSM or power dynamics or within relationship, right? Because if you, part of submission is choosing to surrender, right? It's a choice. It's a gift. It is a like permission for someone to have power over you that can be taken away at any moment. it's very like often confused that like being submissive is a weakness, but I think that being submissive is a strength, because if you take the time to really educate yourself and get to know yourself, then you have the most power in a scene, right? Mm-hmm. Because at any moment, you can say no, you can say stop, you can say change. And the person that you're playing with, if they're playing ethically and consensually, complies. Versus like when you're in a switch position. So whenever you're in a switch position, that makes sense to me, right? Because you know both roles and you choose which role you want to fall in. And so if the person that you're playing with isn't more confident than you in the thing that you're choosing to do, it makes sense to me that you would say, nah, I'm going to take the lead. But I think that that's why I identify as a switch, because I'm a people pleaser by trait. And I tell people often, I'm like, kink has given me a place to like stay in my people pleasing, but with boundaries. So I can come into a scene, I can choose my role, I can people please from the top or the bottom, and then I can leave it there. And that's been like really healing for me, actually.
With being a switch, and I guess kind of more looking at like dom and sub dynamics, what are some examples of being in the more dominant side of being a switch? And what are some examples of being more in the submissive side of being a switch?
Well, I'll say I am a switch that often tops from the bottom.
me too.
Which I think gets mixed reviews. So I have a play partner that I submit to, which is one of few. I generally fall into more of a dominant or equal space whenever I'm in play. But I have one play partner that the majority of our play is me in the submissive role. And how this person has earned this is through a lot of trust, right? Trust through long negotiations and conversation, trust through extensive amounts of repair when things were confusing or when things felt like disconnected, and then trust in any time that there was a discomfort or something out of alignment in the scene, it was automatically adjusted. And so with this person, I can make a slight move and they'll know what that move is. And they know what my yes is, what my no is without me saying words. They know what my body language means. And so that is something that comes over time. And I think that that's something that's like really because of my switchiness, like me surrendering into the submission is an extra special moment. And it comes with a lot of responsibility from anyone that is in the dominant position with me. Whenever I move into like a dominant position, which I feel more connected to. So I often identify myself as a switch leaning top, but it gives me a space to really be in control and to be creative in that control, but also nurturing my people pleasing. So I get to ask a lot of questions. I get to really dissect and analyze what someone is saying and what they're asking for and what they need. And within the information that I've been provided, I can be creative, which creates that mystery and that fun. Yeah.
So if the listeners are listening to this podcast and they're like, I don't know what I identify with, A, is it possible to not identify with a dom sub or a switch? And B, how would you know if you were a switch?
Yeah. So you mentioned it earlier, the BDSM test is a great place for everyone to start. There's a short version and a long version. The short version is also long.
Yes, it is.
So just depending on how much you want to geek out, I would just say take the short version to start. I recommend taking it like at least a couple times a year because it changes, right? The more you get to know yourself, the more it evolves. So the first time you take it, you may be a little more reserved. You may not be sure about things. You may not have experiences that are going to give you a true answer for yourself. So that's why I recommend taking it, you know, frequently. But I want to say, like, you don't have to identify as anything, right? I think that dominant, submissive, like switch are strong languages that come with an identity. I don't necessarily identify in the same way as like some people do. I more so identify as like a top and a bottom. Because I don't have a specific dynamic. It's not a role that I'm trying to play all the time. I play the role in a scene, I play the role in bedroom, and then I leave that role. And that's a big part of like my personal personality, right? But there are people that like a big part of their personality or their identity is like really wearing that role. So I think that in my perspective, like the dominant submissive like languaging can be really empowering. And if it's something that you don't feel empowered by or connected to, there's so many other ways to talk about power dynamics that you can explore.
So when it comes to like power dynamics, I want to start with topping and bottoming. What does that language mean? Because that's not something that I've talked about on the podcast before. And I'm familiar with the language, but how is the word top different from dom? And how is the word bottom different from sub?
Well, within any situation, there is a role, right? So whoever is providing, like whoever's creating the scene, whoever's kind of giving essentially is going to identify as like the top power, right? So they're the one in control. And I did that in quotations for people who are watching the video. But being in control is most often identified as the dominant or the top or the master or other words, right? Being submissive is the person surrendering control or giving control away, right? So submissive or bottoming or slave or other words that people identify with. I think that the choosing comes from a place of personal autonomy and comes from a place of identity development, because we're not taught, like, we can look at that from a gendered perspective, from a general societal stance, right? Like, general societal stance, if we go back to the 60s or before, like we can say like women are this and men are this. And now like in the society we live in, there is a lot of freedom of choice to identify in the ways and be outward with that identity, right? And so I think that it's complex. It's more complex than just being like, this is this and this is that. But I think that it is identity work, right? It's identity work to choose which role you want to play and then also to own that role. And no matter which role you play, there's going to be things that come up for you. There's going to be aftercare needs, like how you're taking care of, how you're taking care of your partner, whether that's a romantic partner, a one-time play partner, someone you met at a bar or like a public event, a long-term relationship. There are ways to connect ethically within these power dynamics that enable each person to really own that role that they choose and feel empowered with it. And that to me is like one of the foundational reasons why we play in this space, right? It's not to take control of someone. It's not to make someone feel bad. It's not to harm. It's to empower, and to empower people by the choices that they make for themselves, not by giving them roles.
You keep bringing up a scene. And so what is a scene? And this power dynamics, is it only in the space of a scene or does it extend outside of that?
Yeah, I do energy work. I'm also a healer. Like I do energy healing. And I interchange the word scene and container, right? So to me, the way that I kind of describe a scene to like non-kinksters is it's a container, right? So it's a space that you're setting up. There's a start, there's a middle, there's an end. And with that, that gives us a lot of freedom to explore. So a scene begins with a vetting process, which is the vetting process is kind of like an interview. So I'm exploring, is this person someone that I want to play with? Do our values align? Do our ethics align? Do they have the skill set to perform the activities that I want to participate in, and vice versa? So vetting should happen both ways. It's a neutral space. To me, negotiation should also happen both ways. It's also a neutral space. And so the power dynamic does not exist within these two spaces, the vetting and the negotiation, even though you're exploring someone's identity in there. Where the power dynamic begins is once the scene starts. So during the negotiation, it is a conversation that has depth and thoroughness and transparency. So it's really important to be really disclosing of information talk about your boundaries, talk about your safety, talk about your risks, talk about your past injuries, talk about your fuck yes, your hell no's, your not sure, but I'm willing to try it. And then I'm willing to also communicate if I change my mind in the moment, right? So that's what people call the side table. It's important to talk about aftercare. How do you want to be taken care of after? What feels good for you? Talk about like the risks involved, you know, doing this activity could result in blah, 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 right? And then also talking about anything that anyone needs to know. So it's a great space to ask questions. It's the first level of connection, because ultimately all of this is just different ways to connect with people, right? And so it's important to make space for that, because that allows a higher level of safety to happen and it allows people to stay in consent. And if something comes up, it allows us a avenue to create repair responsibly. So that happens pre-scene. The scene is when the activities happen. So whatever we negotiated on happens within a scene. Whatever we did not negotiate on, whatever was on our no list, does not happen within a scene. And then when the scene ends and aftercare starts, like the scene is done, right? So once we finish the scene and we start moving into our aftercare, we're not like, oh yeah, now let's do this other thing, right? And it's really important to uphold that structure, because whenever we start to play with these like different levels of intensity and intimacy, our brain chemicals change, the way that we feel changes, we go into these heightened states or these low states. And so it's really, really important to have the conversation when everyone is quote unquote sober, and then to not add anything on after that has begun, because that's where consent violations come up. That's where regret comes up. That's where people start to have feelings of regret about decisions that they made. That's where these hairy lines of like coercion or like these big negative words that we feel or like hear happen. And that's why a scene is set up in that way.
I love that. When you were talking about negotiation, I was thinking about 50 Shades of Grey. You've seen that, right?
Yeah.
So negotiation is not like 50 Shades of Grey.
No.
Where they hand you a 50-page packet and tell you this is how it is, sign.
I mean, to each their own and their negotiation style, right? It's going to be unique. For me, I have probably like 3 standard negotiations that get worked differently, right? Mm-hmm. So I have a pickup play style negotiation, which happens like more in a public setting. I'm at House of Black. I meet someone. We have a conversation. We're like, do you want to play together? Right? And that's going to be a more like quick and dirty. I have a negotiation that I might have with like my clients that are a little bit more thorough, that are going to be specific to what we are agreeing upon in that specific scene. Mm-hmm. And then I have negotiations that I have with ongoing partners. So people that I'm going to play with for an extended period of time, where I have a larger variety of activities, where I have like more room. And so I have these kind of like 3 bucket styles, and I may, each time I negotiate, it's molded for that specific scene and that setting and that person. But I'm not going to have like a 2-hour or 1-month long negotiation with someone that I meet at a club, right?
Yeah. Depending on the environment, like if you're there and you're wanting to take them home, you're not going to, or play in the moment there too, even, but you're not going to, oh, well, we need to have coffee and discuss this. Because sometimes that's not realistic for all situations. So
no. And it's like, I might. It depends on what I want to do with them, right? Mm-hmm. And that's going to be every person's value set. And that's why, to me, the most important place to start is really identifying your own self. I think that it's important for you to know your why, not from a place of judgment or not from a place of trying to justify your actions, but from a place of, why are you doing what you're doing, so that you can be intentional about what you're doing? I think that that's really, really important. So my why in a public space, right? Like if I'm at a party and they happen to have like kinky activities, my why is because I like doing kinky activities and I want to experience something new, versus my why with a romantic partner is because I'm trying to build deeper connection with that person. Mm-hmm. So my negotiations are going to look very, very differently, right? Like my negotiation with someone at a public party is going to be, what are the risks? you know, like, what is the safety? What do I need to know? Here's where you can't touch me. Here's how you can't touch me. Here's where you can. Here's what my yeses are. So just kind of like quick and dirty. Here's what I want my scene to look like. Here's how I want for it to feel. Versus with a partner, like, it's more of a curation of an experience. So I'm going to like develop out the scene. I'm going to like really think about all the layers of myself and them. I'm going to think about things that we've experienced before and think about things that maybe I feel really curious about that I feel nervous to share with other people, but I feel safe to do that with them.
With your ongoing partners, with negotiation, how often do you renegotiate?
I like to practice negotiating every time. Sometimes it's just the usual or same as last time. Anything changed since last time we played? Anything off the table for today, right? So we have our long negotiation. We know, like, a common thing that a lot of men will say, you know, like, no butt stuff, right? Mm-hmm. Like, that's a frequent thing that you'll get. So we'll just have that quick check-in, right? Like, we did the long negotiation. We said what our like absolute no's are. We said, you know, here's things that are maybes. We've said things that are yes, yes, yes. And a quick check-in is more like, okay, what's good for today? What, you know, today, I know usually I want to connect sexually after, but today I'm not feeling like it. So today that's off the table.
I think that sometimes it's really helpful to have like tools like that. Mm-hmm. Are there any like negotiation checklists that you would recommend or any tools that you would recommend for people who are wanting to maybe create these scenes in their own home?
Well, I have a few basics. Like, I have a confidence and intimacy and kink mentorship and like online space that I do this work with people within. So I have tools within there. Google's a great resource because you can literally Google whatever you want to know and Google kink. And there will be so many people have put together like resources to kind of help start that conversation for you if you're really feeling stuck. What my recommendation would be is read through a few different styles and then create your own, because it's your own unique relationship. And part of the beauty of this is that you get to explore connection and creating the way that you get to connect. And so, yeah, like, you can have a checklist and use that. I think it keeps you very in your head. A lot of the work that I do with people is exploring getting out of our head and dropping into our body. And so we get the information, but then how do we actually apply it? And so I would say, like, use that as a template and then figure out what works for you.
Yeah, I love that tool. And creating what you need, I think, is so helpful, because there are going to be a lot of varieties of everything, but maybe that doesn't really fit what you are looking for. And so make what works best for you, that asks the questions that you need answered, or that has like more specific things tailored to the experiences that you're looking to have.
Yeah. And I think that that's something that comes up a lot for me in my work. I do men's intimacy mentoring, and I work with men one-on-one on exploring like healing and relationship and connecting with intimacy, connecting with different relationship dynamics and styles. And every single time I'm in like the onboarding interview, right? They're like, give me a checklist. And my answer is no. I just had a closing, like a closing of our container with one of my mentees. And, you know, that was like part of his feedback was, you know, have you thought about? And I'm like, I think about it. And every time I start a mentorship, this starts, right? Like, it's always the entry. Like, it is very much in the like masculine energy to be like, okay, I need a checklist. I need a to-do. I need things to be in order. And that's not from a gendered stance. That's just like the energetics. But I push back on that, because a big part of the work that I am like expanding and sharing with people is the permission to let go of the boxes and to create your own, right? To create your own space. Like, you don't need to live within a box. You can make decisions in the moment because you're operating from an ethical and consensual space. And if you're operating ethically and consensually and in integrity with yourself, there's so much room, right? My ethics are going to look slightly different from someone else's, but there's a standard of ethics within kink. There's a standard of ethics within relationship. There's a standard of ethics within like the medical field. So there's standards that we all know.
Yeah.
Right.
Are you ready to start understanding yourself better, learning and recognizing your patterns, and really develop a relationship with yourself? If this sounds like you, the Unleashing My Power, a Women's Empowerment and Gratitude Journal is for you. This journal was specifically curated for women just like you to help you take back your power and develop and go to the next level in life. My friend Danielle and I created this journal because of our own experiences and what we were looking for in a daily practice to improve our connection to self and really become connected with ourselves. This is game-changing, and the feedback that we are getting from other women who have started using this journal is absolutely amazing. You can find it on Amazon, or you can go to jordandanelle.com/journal, and it'll take you right there. I hope you enjoy. Be sure to go snag yours right away and leave me a review. Tell us what you think about it. Slide in the DMs. I know that your life will change when you start using this journal.
If you are like somebody who's maybe in a relationship and they want to explore some of these power dynamics, how would you recommend they start that?
Slowly. Lots of conversation. Create space before action, right? Create space for conversation, for confusion, for conflict, for conversation, for conversation. Because it is a massive switch in our norm, right? And it comes with a lot of emotional baggage that can be really beautiful and really healing. And it can be really activating and it can be really triggering. And so I think that starting slowly, aligning on intent, doing one thing at a time, and then expanding once you grow through those things is going to give you longevity. A lot of times people start off really fast. They take on too much. They go through states of what we call frenzy, which is where you have a positive experience and then you almost start fiending for more. So you start just like oftentimes without a lot of discernment, right? You put yourself into situations where you can be harmed or you do experience harm because you're not operating from like a grounded space. So I think that that can happen in any relationship. And a way to mitigate that is to really take your time and to take your time.
I'm curious, as somebody who is a switch that leans more top, how you feel about this. If you were working with, say, a client, or maybe a client isn't really a good example, but a partner who enters into subspace, and then there's like that low the next day sometimes. What is subspace? And how do you help support maybe the partners who do experience that?
Yeah. So top and subspace, right? Like it happens on both ends. So you can enter into subspace. You can enter into that same space from like the top or the dominant side as well. And it just is big shift in your like emotional and mental capacity, right? So whenever we go into scene, like I mentioned before, our brain chemicals change, the way we feel changes. So we can often reach these states of euphoria, really high highs, really like big feelings. And what can happen is a state of drop. So it's going from that really high state to having like a really big low in a short period of time. If you haven't experienced it, it's something that you might feel, you know, if you do psychedelics or if you do drugs, like that shift that you might have.
Literally going to compare it
to. Or like a big hangover where, you know, like, anytime I like have blacked out, I don't drink much anymore. But anytime I've like blacked out or even just like browned out, just gotten like drunk enough to not really remember things, I have like a big drop after because it's just like such a huge shift in such a short period of time. So it can be hard to identify if you've never experienced that change before. It can bring up a state of shame, right? Like, why did I feel so good and now I don't? And it can bring up a sense of shame of like, oh, I can't connect, or like I can't ask for support. So I'm just going to try to deal with it on my own. And so my recommendations and one of my like non-negotiables whenever I open up any sort of container with someone, whether it be in my healing work or in my kink work, is a next day check-in and then an open door for continued connection thereafter. And that is really important for me and my ethics within the space because drop can happen immediately. So we can feel that low immediately after a scene ends on either side. Drop can happen the next day, like within 24 hours. And sometimes drop can happen like days or weeks later. And so keeping that line of communication and connection open gives people the permission to ask for support and to receive support, even if you're like, I don't actually want to play with this person again, right? It's okay to not want to continue a connection with someone, but it's everyone's responsibility to play ethically. And even if it's something that you discover, like, I can't support you as a person in choosing to like take on these types of connections, I believe that it's also your responsibility to help people find the support that they need. So even if you're not the one that's going to provide it, helping them find resources and making sure that they're cared for is important to me.
Yeah. I love talking about this because this is something that happens for me. Like I feel like some partners will literally blast you to another universe. And then for me, it's like 24 hours later, it just, my world is just like in shambles pretty much. So it's very interesting. And it took me a while to realize the connection. I'm like, oh, this is a drop, and it's very equivalent to like substance use. Very, very similar. Quite honestly, feels worse for me. I mean, obviously everybody's experience is going to be different, but I think that's an area that is not very often discussed, especially outside of the world of kink. And if so many sexual experiences and encounters, you can have that, even not in the space of kink.
Yeah.
And so bringing awareness to like sometimes those emotions and feelings, they're very normal and valid, and setting up a way to have that support. I know for me, like one of my girlfriends, there was this guy that I was playing with, and she's like, you know, you always, after you see him, you always have a low. I'm like, oh, interesting, noted. So what am I going to do if I know that I'm going to see him? How am I going to prepare to support myself for that low? And it was so interesting because then the next time I had all of my support in place so that I didn't experience that, or that I was supported if I was experiencing it. And it was such a different experience.
It's super important. And like, I love that you brought in like the non-kink sexual connection, right? I think that that's something that I feel really passionate about and why I choose the languaging that I choose. So I do intimacy work, which intimacy is not exclusive to sex. Intimacy is not exclusive to kink. Intimacy is a form of deeper connection. But intimacy happens in kink and intimacy happens in sex, right? So anytime that we are exploring intimacy, we have that possibility of feeling low feelings. We may feel regret. We may feel shame. We may feel disconnected. We may feel our abandonment wounds come up. We may feel all of these like big emotions. And so when we're playing with intimacy, we're also playing with our vulnerability. And that is, to me, these are all layers of like why drop happens, because we're playing with our growth and we're playing with our healing, even if we are doing it in a very specific way, right? If we're like, I'm going to like have the wildest sex of my life, you're still playing with your edges because you're playing with dismantling stories that aren't yours. You're playing with past things that you have experienced. All of that comes up whenever we're in vulnerable and intimate spaces. And so it is very likely that you can have shifts in the way that you experience and feel and how you feel about the experiences that you've had. I like that you brought into the space of, oh, like I was doing this, this became my awareness, and then I found a solution. And that's where like the aftercare talk is really important, right? Because if you don't know what your needs are, you can't communicate those needs to someone else, and someone else can't support you through your needs or validate that they're not going to. I've had partners that I have played with for one scene who are like, I don't do check-ins, right? Like, I won't check in with you tomorrow. I won't talk to you after this, but I'll play with you in this moment. And then that's it. And that I was like, cool. I don't really care to have a relationship with this person. I played in the scene. After scene, it was fine. I didn't have drop, but I realized, I took away from that, that that doesn't feel good for me, because a big part of why I'm choosing these types of connections is for intimacy, is for vulnerability, is to feel connected to someone else, to the space, to the scene. And so if I'm not having like a relational, like something that feels closure or ongoing, it's not really what I strive for.
Yeah. And I was feeling so like activated by like not in a bad way, but just like activated in like no check-ins. Like that to me, I agree, would be something that I probably would not be interested in.
Yeah. And that's going to be different for everyone, which is hard for me to like feel like, whew, because I want check-in, but I realized why I want check-in. And that made it feel differently for me, right? Mm-hmm. Where it's like, now I can choose to play at a party where I probably won't have a relationship or a connection with a person again. And I can be okay with that, versus if I took my time kind of layering into the ways that I experience things. In the past, I've gone to a party and played and then gone home and like never saw this person and not had connection. That would feel differently than it does for me today. Mm-hmm. And some people have like a lower level or different like varying levels of how they want to connect with people. And so it feels good for them to have an experience and leave it in the experience and not have what feels like pressure or obligation to like maintain connection with others in a certain way.
Yes. How does playing a switch contribute to self-discovery and personal growth in the realm of BDSM and kink? And I think we've touched on this some, but how can it benefit you on your healing journey, on your self-discovery journey?
Well, I think any role that you choose to play can really benefit you, mm-hmm. right? For me personally, really owning my switchiness has given me power, has given me a lot of like confidence, because I get to be in control even more so. Which I love.
same.
So I'm like, no, today I want to be dominant. Today I want to be tying, you know, like I want to top. I want to lead the scene. I want to create the scene. Not to say that you can't do that from another role. If you are playing with someone, like it's really fun to collaborate with your partners. So that can happen from any level. Sometimes I just am really tired and I do a lot of service work. So I'm providing services for people often. And sometimes it feels really good to just be cared for and to not have to think and to be like, I'm such a brat. So I love bratting. I love bratting from both sides, but it's so much more fun to brat from the bottom. And I was listening to this person's Instagram the other day about being a brat and their connectivity to it. And I was like, oh my God, that makes so much sense to me. And what they said was like, whenever you are like being a brat, like in the submissive side, right? And you want something to be differently, like bratting is a way to ask for that without words. And that like just made me feel so good and seen, because I was like, oh yeah, like if I am bored, like if the person I'm tying with is taking too long, I'll be like sassy, or I'll like pull away, or I'll do something bratty to like make them pay more attention to me, to make them do something that I want them to do, right? Like if I want it to be rougher, as what this person said, and I was like, oh, I identify with that. I want it to be rougher or faster or like a different way, then I'll do something bratty to like evoke that. And I think that that's what's like really fun about playing both sides, is it allows me to really understand what's happening. So it has allowed me to like alleviate a lot of confusion in places that I might feel confused, because I'm a high like analytical person. It allows me to understand what the other side feels like. And it also allows me to be like more creative, because I get to wear more hats and play more roles and try out different things. So
yeah, I feel like kink and really our sexuality in general is such a great way to explore ourselves, and provides a great opportunity to discover who we are. Mm-hmm. And it's very often overlooked. You know, when you look at personal development, it's very much so like don't look at the world of sex. But there is so much power that is in our sexuality that can be learned from that. And I love learning in that space.
Yeah. I'll say something that I do want to say that I try to say often because it's really important to me is kink is not sexual inherently. It can be, it can include sexual activities, but I do feel that kink is strongly identified and tied to people's sexuality. And so those two things are different, even though they can be similar. I'll say probably like 90% of my kink is non-sexual. And the small part that is still has a lot of layers of non-sexual. It is tied to my sexuality. It's tied to my sexual expression. It's tied to the way that I relate to others. It's tied to the way that I relate to myself. It's tied to my healing. It's tied to my creativity. Mm. But not always is it a sexual act or activity. And I think that's really important for me to say, because I think that a lot of people pull away from something that I find to be so beautiful and empowering because of like stigma. And I think that if you can really open up towards like looking at it from a multitude of lenses, you can find what feels good for you. And then you can really start to like blossom and bloom in parts of yourself that you didn't even know were there. I connect kink mostly to like my weirdness versus like my sex.
Yeah. I'm glad that you made that distinction because I think that is so important. When people hear kink, they think a lot of times they do think sex or mm-hmm. sexual encounters. And sure, that may happen. But in the world of kink and BDSM, that is not generally or always what the experiences involve.
No, but everyone could benefit from learning from the way that kink and BDSM has been established by a community and can improve wherever their relationships are, right? So if you want to be monogamous, if you want to be non-kinky, there's so much to learn by like, at the very least, like learning the foundations.
And from my personal perspective, I feel like the kink world has so many really good tools that they utilize that are very helpful for everyone. And it's a great place to learn. And if you are maybe in a relationship that's monogamous, you don't identify as kinky, but maybe you want to learn a skill. Maybe mm-hmm. you want to learn how to tie your partner up. That or learn how to play with candle wax safely. I'm just trying to think of some of the flyers that I've recently seen or just different things like that. Mm-hmm. Like you can go to spaces and still be in monogamy and learn these mm-hmm. things because that has nothing to do with sex.
Yeah.
And you can take that home and share your knowledge with your partners. You can share your knowledge with your friends. And yeah, I think it's just so informational.
It is. And like rope for me is non-sexual. Sometimes it is, but 98% of it is non-sexual. It is a way to connect. It's a way to explore my creativity, right? Candle wax is more connected to my sexuality. It's connected to my sensuality more than my sexual expression, right? So it feels very sensual. It feels very like warm and like trusting. If I wanted to learn impact play, almost everyone likes some sort of physical contact, right? So figuring out what kind of physical contact feels good and wants to be shared, whether it's like a light smack or a harder hit, and learning how to do that properly so that it's safe, so that you are actually bringing enjoyment and pleasure versus harm. Most people like their hair pulled or like a touch, you know? So like, these are things that you can learn from kink community and educators that aren't established in general society, right? Like we have these big barriers that are like, this is wrong and this is right, where kink allows the gray area to take up space with consent and with ethics.
Yes, I love that. So before we wrap up the podcast, I would love for you to define what does pleasure mean to you?
Pleasure for me lives in presence, right? So in the moments that I'm able to really drop into being fully present, to being in my body, to feeling the feelings and the sensations no matter where that context is coming from, that's pleasure. So I can experience that with food. I can experience that with the outdoors. I can experience that platonically with friends. I can experience that romantically or sexually or kinkily through art, through all sorts of things. But it's really, for me, pleasure lies in presence.
Mm, I love that. I talk about presence all the time with a friend of mine and how important that is for us. And it's not important for everybody, but presence is, I highly value that. Where can the listeners find you at?
So my website is Self Study Lab. You can also find me on Instagram there and everything connected to me through there.
Yes, I love
to keep it easy.
And do you have like any programs or courses or things that you would like to share with the listeners?
Yeah. So I just launched Embodied Sex Ed. So I'm currently running it as a 5-month cohort where we will kind of dive deeper into relationship and kink and BDSM, tantra and intimacy. Right now we're working on healing and pleasure and kind of grounding into the space. So each month we'll have live classes online, we'll have some offline workshops, and we will also have we have an online container where people can gather and connect and continue learning, where we have more resources and tools for people to explore. I do one-on-one work with individuals and couples. I specialize in men's intimacy work, and I work with individuals and couples' body-centered practices, whether it be for healing or for expanding and exploring intimacy and kink and relationship. And I think those are the two main things.
I love that.
Yeah.
Well, thank you so much for chatting with me today. This has been such an amazing conversation, and I have enjoyed picking your brain.
Yeah. Thank you so much for having me.
This podcast is sponsored by Intimacy Coaching by Jordan Donnell. Have you ever desired more from your sex life, or feel like you're having good sex but curious about how to make it even better? Are you desiring a deeper intimate connection with yourself? Or maybe you are dealing with desire and arousal concerns, or struggling with communicating your desires with your partner. If you're hearing this and thinking, that might be me, and you're curious to learn a bit more, let's chat. I would love to talk with you more to see if working with me is a good fit for you. To learn more about intimacy coaching with Jordan Donnell, go to coaching.jordandonnell.com. Thank you for listening to this podcast.
Thank you for joining today and continuing to bring awareness to women's health. If you love the show, please subscribe so you never miss another episode, and leave a review for others to see. If you want to see me on the daily, you can check out my bio for links to all my pages. Be sure to share this episode with your girlfriends. Thanks again, and see you next episode.